Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And the hour has come to conclude our discussion about smartwatches. So, yeah, we recorded an epic episode, and I made so many jokes about time that I broke Lauren. And that epic episode, as you know, was split into two episodes. If you don't know, go back and listen to the earlier episode where we have part one. And now we're going to really focus on the evolution of the smartwatch when we started seeing connectivity.
Right. Yeah, we've come up through the history of how clocks and watches happened a little bit, and now we're getting ready to talk about what we would start considering smart.
Yeah, let's get to it.
Smart, yes.
We pretty much covered like these digital watches that have interesting additional features to them. Again, I don't know that we would call any of them smart. You might argue that being able to program your watch, doing some basic programming, makes it sort of a smart watch because it does go beyond the level of telling time. It could technically do whatever memory could hold and whatever you could program.
Yeah, but to be fair, I do not know how much memory that first UC 2000 had in it. So.
Right. And probably not very much. But we've covered the basic kinds of watches, digital watches, the sort of stuff they could do once we began to figure out, hey, you know, there are other things that transistors can do besides just have us tell time. Let's figure out these other options we might be able to give people. When we hit 1994, that's when Timex comes out with a watch that actually has some connectivity features in it, and they use a really weird implementation to do it.
It had an optical sensor on the watch's face.
Yeah, this is the Data Link 150, and it was the first watch that allowed you to transfer information from a PC to the watch. So let's say that you want to use the watch to keep track of your contacts. You're essentially using it sort of like a very primitive PDA. And so what you do is you would go on the PC, you would use some proprietary software that came with the watch. So this is something that you would install on your computer. It's not something that's on the watch itself. You type out whatever it is you want to store on the watch. And then when you were ready to transfer the information, it would transmit that through a series of flashes on your monitor. And you would hold, you'd physically hold the watch up so that it was next to your monitor so it could catch that flashing information. And that would be translated into whatever it was you had typed. So it was kind of like, you know, the old semaphore approach to communication, except in this case, you're talking about it's all digital once it goes through the flashes of light.
but it was still, really very tiny lighthouse. Yeah.
it was pretty cool idea in the sense that, you know, you didn't have to have any cables or anything in order for you to transfer
wireless technology. Hey.
Right. Now, I imagine that if there were any, like, I could easily imagine that there were probably issues with this watch whenever you had certain lighting situations. Like, if your desk or office was lit in a certain way, it might not transmit the information accurately, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it still was an interesting approach to fixing this. I wonder how long it took to transmit information. Like, if you were to type a particularly long list, let's say that you were hitting the capacity for what the watch could hold, I wonder how long it would take to transmit. I honestly don't have the information, but it does make me curious if you had to hold the watch up for, like, a half hour while your monitor just flashes seemingly at random at you.
Yeah. In 1995, we started getting into some infrared technology in transferring data between two watches. This was the Casio Infraceptor.
Wow.
It was a gaming watch that you could use this little infrared gadget to play little multiplayer games.
Gotcha.
With someone else who had the same watch.
Same watch, right. Mm-hmm. So you have two people. And this is not unusual. We've seen lots of proprietary approaches to mobile gaming. Nintendo does this very similar thing where you're using not necessarily infrared, you're using radio waves in that case. But in this case, it's infrared waves, kind of like what you would have with a remote control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very innovative approach, especially for 95.
Sure. Yeah, certainly. I don't think that in our digital pets episode, I don't think that, that those started happening until almost a decade later.
Yeah, it was a little bit later. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In 2001, IBM hit the scene with the watchpad. This was a Linux-based watch.
Oh, wow.
So this watch has its own little operating system. It was a stripped down version of Linux. It had a QVGA LCD screen. It included Bluetooth and an accelerometer in it. So it had a lot of the basic features that we think of in some of the more advanced smartwatches that we're starting to see hit the market today.
Wow, yeah.
It did have a slight disadvantage with all of this equipment. It was a little power hungry and not in the Dr. Evil, I'm going to conquer the world kind of way, but rather the battery lasted about 2 hours, which is when you have a timepiece and you need to know what time it is.
Yeah. Which,
somewhat problematic.
I feel like that's about average for maybe the PDAs of the time.
Normally you wouldn't be operating a PDA consistently.
Continually,
2 hours, but a watch you might, very well be required to use it quite a few times. So if it only lasts a couple of hours, I guess you could tell time by how frequently you had to charge it. Not terribly useful.
Yeah, that's much like the quartz mechanism. That's a really really
not
accurate.
Not necessarily the way you want to tell time, but it works.
As of 2002, Casio came out with a wrist camera.
Right.
That was the name of the watch. It was the wrist camera. And this had a fancy 120 pixel square.
Yeah, 120 by 120 pixels. Yeah, that's the resolution you could get on this thing. And it was not in color, right?
It was grayscale.
Yeah. So you could take very primitive photos with this wrist camera. It's more like a proof of concept.
Sure. But you know, telling time and taking pictures.
Yeah.
Simultaneously.
It was also the same year that the Fossil Wrist PDA came out, and it came out in two different versions. There was one that supported the Palm operating system, and there was one that supported Pocket PC, which was Microsoft's mobile approach.
That was very egalitarian of them.
Yes. It had 190 kilobytes of memory that could store up to around, more than 1,000 contacts. or around 350 memos, depending upon what else you wanted to put in there. You know, you could have some combination thereof, but that's about the full extent of its storage capabilities. Moving up to 2005.
2005 was the first E-Ink watch. That was, again, by Seiko.
Now, E-Ink, one of the reasons why E-Ink is so attractive to electronics manufacturers is that it has a very low power consumption rate.
Right.
It only consumes power whenever it has to change the display. So if you have a display that's not changing frequently, then E-Ink ends up saving you a lot of power. So let's say that, you know, there's no second indicator on the watch. If it's only indicated
by minutes, updating once a minute, then
it's not so bad. It can actually, the battery can last a very long time. It's much more efficient than LCD displays or even LED displays.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, depending, of course, on how the E-Ink is lit, because if it's got a backlight going all the time,
then that will obviously,
that's a power drain.
That'll drain power. So a lot of E-Ink displays don't have any backlighting at all. They might have light that'll come in from the side to illuminate a screen if it's, because, you know, clearly you want to have a watch that's going to be able to work even if you are in the dark.
Right.
You can't. Yeah. It's like, I need to know what time it is even when there are no lights on.
Yeah. And a lot of these early watches, we should say, also did include, you know, would only have the backlight turn on if you press a button.
Right. It wasn't like it was constantly
lit, because
in 2006 Microsoft introduced the SPOT, which stands for Smart Personal Objects Technology. It was a smart watch that was meant to auto adjust to time zones by using FM radio signals. It would actually receive radio signals to determine where you were.
That's cool.
And these radio signals would have within it whatever the local time was, so it would automatically adjust to the local time zone. And it could also display information like traffic warnings or even things like messages from your Outlook email. But it had a fairly small screen and the battery life was very limited, so they weren't seen as being terribly useful. By 2008, Microsoft had shuttered the program, so it only lasted for about 2 years. But it was one of those early attempts by Microsoft to enter the smartwatch space. In 2007, Sony Ericsson introduced the MBW150, which paired with other Sony Ericsson products, specifically Sony Ericsson phones, via Bluetooth. It could display a single line of text. So this was a watch that, if you looked at it, it wasn't a digital watch. It actually had watch hands and it had a watch face, but there was a little blank, tiny screen that could display one line of text. And that one line of text could be something like, if you had an incoming phone call, it would tell you the name of the person who was calling you. Or it could give you other alerts. And it also could vibrate. It had a little motor inside it that would allow it to vibrate whenever you got a call. So that way, like, I miss calls all the time because, as the IT crowd would say, my vibrate setting's a little weedy. So I don't tend to notice when my phone is vibrating. But if I, you know, had a watch that would vibrate, then I would either think I was having a heart attack or that I was actually getting a phone call. And maybe once I realized I was getting a phone call, I would then have a heart attack because no one calls me.
Aww.
I'm so lonely. So.
Then I think you have a note in 2009.
I do. 2009. That's when Samsung came out with the S9-110. That was a watch that was also a phone. Now, it's not the only watch phone that came out that year, but it was a 1.76-inch touchscreen phone watch. It used Bluetooth. It could connect with other devices. It could get email, and it could do MP3 playback. It had 40 megabytes of internal memory. And the other watch phone that came out that year, or that debuted that year, caught the attention of CES, the former Consumer Electronics Showcase, now it's just CES. But in 2009, I attended that year, and I remember seeing this in person. I was not allowed to touch it at the time. Only LG representatives were allowed to wear it. It was the LG watch phone, also known as the LG GD910. And it was one of those darlings of the show floor, along with the Palm Pre. So don't get too attached to stuff at CES is the moral of this tale. It sold in other parts of the world, in Europe and in Asia, but it never came to the United States. But it was actually a phone, just like the Samsung one was. It had a cellular chip inside it that would allow you to make phone calls, and it would work on cellular networks. So it's not something that you would pair with another device, which was an interesting approach. it was, again, it never came to the U.S., so we can never really test it out. I imagine that the battery life on this was probably pretty limited, too. I imagine also that a lot of devices go now with pairing with a smartphone as opposed to having all this technology crammed into it in order to avoid things like battery life that only lasts a few hours.
Right, sure. Also, you know, just the advancements in, say, Bluetooth are such that it makes it a lot easier.
That's true.
These days, too, you know, 4.0 is
much more energy efficient than mm-hmm. earlier versions of Bluetooth. That is a good point. And yeah. also, the other thing that the Watch phone had was voice recognition capabilities.
Okay.
So in this case, it actually did have the capacity to take voice commands, which, interesting. Again, and just as you would expect, when I saw this at CES, what was the example everyone gave?
Dick Tracy!
Exactly right. Dick Tracy. Everyone's like, yeah, it's the Dick Tracy wristwatch. And I'm thinking, like, how many more years are we going to have while that's still a valid reference, reference?
When I think of voice commands to a watch, I think of a glitch from that show, Reboot, thank you.
Right.
Which I don't think, I think you still haven't watched.
But
I'm not going to insult Glitch by calling him a watch because that would be a terrible, terrible thing to do.
I'll take your word for it.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Moving on, in 2010, that was the year that iPod's sixth generation Nano came out.
Right.
And it became this phenomenon of watch use. You could pull up a clock face on it, but it wasn't really a function that it had been intended for. But a couple third party people started putting together these watch bands and cases for it.
Yeah, the Hex watch band is probably the one that most people are familiar with.
Sure, sure. You know, it's and then Apple started to realize that people were using this for this purpose and started updating the firmware with lots of fun stuff, that,
like different watch faces and mm-hmm, things like mm-hmm. that.
You know, it was a 1.5-inch 240x240 pixel multi-touch display.
Right,
and you know, it seemed really great. Like, I remember a lot of people being so excited about this right up until 2012 when they released the seventh generation Nano that was in a vertical format.
Right.
And basically killed it, as far as I can tell, strategically on purpose for potential future development of their own.
Stay tuned. Yeah,
watch.
The sixth generation Nano, again, you know, depending on your definition of smartwatch, might not apply. Because it was, again, mostly self-contained. It was MP3 player. It could do other stuff besides tell the time, but it wasn't.
You could. I think that you could sync it to. Well, I mean, you could sync it to a computer
music. Sync it. Yeah, you could sync it. You could not update remotely. Like, you had to have it synced. So depending upon your definition, you might not call it a smartwatch. I mean, first of all, it wasn't marketed as a smartwatch. It was marketed as an MP3 player, but using it as a timepiece and an MP3 player made a lot of sense. And in fact, the first time I saw it, that was the first thing I thought, was that, gosh, you just put that on a watch band and you've got yourself essentially a smartwatch in my mind. Like, I'm not so strict as to say that it has to be completely free of any other material in order for it to count as a smartwatch. Like, it has to be self-reliant,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of the smartwatches that I like pair up with another device.
Right.
You know, without that pairing, they don't have the functionality that you would, you know, associate with a smartwatch.
Sure,
so,
sure. And it is certainly easier, yes, to pair something to a either iOS or Android system, or you know, Microsoft is, I think, rumored to be thinking about getting into the smartwatch game as well.
Right.
So.
And of course, you know, there are a lot of other companies that are building out devices like watches that already hook up into existing platforms, both Android and iOS. And we'll talk about a couple of them. In 2011, WIMM, that's WIMM, had an Android watch that was just meant as a developer kit. It wasn't a consumer product. You know, it was really designed to kind of get Android developers into thinking about designing apps specifically for a smartwatch form factor. In 2012, WIMM entered into a secret and exclusive partnership with a company that I don't know what the identity is, because they never said. But anyway,
it is still secret.
The developer kits no longer are available.
2012 is also the year that Sony came out with their first smartwatch design.
Yep. And Motorola came out with the Moto Active, which was part smartwatch, part athletic activity tracker.
Mm-hmm.
So it had the accelerometer. It also had a GPS sensor in it, so it could even track your location, for those of us who aren't so worried about that. But anyway, it also had Bluetooth 4.0. there's a whole other podcast that we're going to do about privacy and being tracked, and it doesn't belong here. But anyway, it also could connect to other types of sensors. So if you had a sensor attached to your bike, for example, that recorded how far you had traveled through Bluetooth, you could connect your Moto Active with that sensor, and the Moto Active would essentially become your window for all things activity related. And it also had, could play MP3s. It could act as a second screen for a phone and give you things like your, you know, caller ID or text messages. It could run Android apps, but the functionality was somewhat limited because, again, Android apps were designed for smartphones and for tablets, not for watches at this point. So trying to use some of them was more trouble than what they were worth, from what I understand. I never actually had a chance to really play with one. I got to play with one briefly at a CES, but I didn't get a chance to really dive into it. It did have 8 gigabytes of flash memory.
How?
8 gigs. Yeah. You know, it wasn't that long ago we were talking about kilobytes.
Yeah.
And now we're into the gigabytes. So it could actually hold as much as some MP3 players.
Right.
So it could hold, you know, a library's worth of music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. 2012 was also the year that that the Pebble Kickstarter happened, and this is a point that Jonathan, as of like today, has a little bit of added bitterness towards because.
Pebble.
All right. So just the gig, in case for some reason you did not hear about how Pebble was this smartwatch that had a $100,000 goal, earned over $10 million. It's the most
$10.2 million.
The most successful project to date in Kickstarter history. And as of July 7th,
will be available in certain Best Buy stores.
And that's great for Pebble.
Pebble.
The problem is, Jonathan. Do you want to take this, or do you not have the words?
Here's the problem. In January 2013, certain Jonathan Strickland put in a pre-order for a Cherry Red Pebble. And he's very much looking forward to wearing this Cherry Red Pebble everywhere. Perhaps on episodes of Forward Thinking, where the entire world could see him wearing a Cherry Red Pebble. But Jonathan has not received his Cherry Red Pebble, even though he dreams of it every night. And instead has learned that it will be available in Best Buy, and that he could have walked into a brick-and-mortar store and bought a Pebble. Although, technically, I don't think it was Cherry Red. I think the Cherry Red ones won't be available till a little bit later in July. But anyway, the point being that he could have bought a black one.
They will only have black ones available at Best Buy for now.
But it's just...
I assume until they actually fill their pre-orders.
Seeing that that it was coming to brick-and-mortar stores before I finally get my... Now, let's be clear. I was not a Kickstarter backer, so I totally agreed with the company's decision that they wanted to fulfill all backers' orders first before going into pre-order. I thought that was the right decision to make. It was the thing that rewarded the people who believed in the company from the very get-go. I totally understand that. And then I pre-ordered. See, when I pre-ordered the pre part...
It's red. You're getting a red one.
Yeah. But okay, this being said, that I was not really convinced about the Pebble until I went again to CES.
Yes.
And there I saw the founder of the company talking about the Pebble, giving a demo of it, explaining what their project was, explaining how they came about it. I got to take a really close look at them. I was really impressed by the company. I was impressed by the product. And that's when I went and put in a pre-order. And while I'm grousing right now, it's really just out of the desire to have it. I don't actually have any ill will toward the company. That's mostly played up for laughs. So really, if anyone from Pebble is listening, I'm not actually upset. I just eager to get one because this is something that pairs with a smartphone. It pairs with either an Android device or an iOS device.
Right. To provide kind of like push notifications basically for emails, for text messages, for phone calls.
Yep. And it uses an e-paper display, which is a little different from e-ink. It's not exactly the same thing.
Well, e-ink is proprietary, I believe.
And e-paper doesn't. E-paper is, again, another technology that makes it look like it's, paper, just like e-ink displays do. It doesn't have a backlight unless you press the little... I don't think it's backlit. I think it's lit from the side. It might be backlit, but it's not active unless you press a button.
Uh-huh.
So that helps conserve energy.
Right.
It does hook up through Bluetooth, and I remember them saying that this would, in fact, impact the battery life of your smartphone, so by about 5 to 10%. So you're going to have 5 to 10% less time available on whatever device you have paired to the Pebble. It also will give you notifications, like you were saying. Neat device. One of those things that was sort of an upstart company and really captured a lot of people's interest, obviously, from the fact that they raised, so much more.
$10 million.
$10 million, and they're asking for
$100,000. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just recently, E Inc. themselves announced a flexible 1.73-inch touch display called the Mobius.
Oh,
for
wow.
Future release.
I haven't seen this. That sounds cool.
Uh-huh. And lots of companies are rumored to be getting into this game. I think.
Now, I will say, before we get into the rumors, there are a couple that I want to talk about that are available right now this year.
Yeah.
Sony just announced earlier in June. We were recording this at the very beginning of July.
Mm-hmm. July 2nd.
But in June, they announced that they were coming out with the Smartwatch 2.
To arrive in September 2013.
So that's their successor to their earlier smartwatch. And again, it's an Android-powered smartwatch. It also has NFC connectivity, near field communication connectivity. So that sounds like it's got some early buzz behind it. So that sounds pretty cool. Also, the Martian watches launched. The Martian Passport, the Martian Victory, and the Martian G2G smartwatches. They have voice controls and they can actually act as a speakerphone. They pair with a smartphone. But they can act as a speakerphone, and they allow you to use services like Siri over the
cool.
watch.
Uh-huh.
CNET did not give a very positive review. It was a 3-star review out of 5, saying that there were some problems with the voice quality, that both listening to a speakerphone conversation or trying to interact with Siri. Siri on a good day can be a little taxing, depending upon Siri's mood. But apparently Siri over a speakerphone gets it just has trouble understanding what it is you want.
Right. Yeah. Whenever any of these microphones don't have sufficient
clarity
yeah. or blocking technology
right.
for
right. all the ambient noise that's
for
around
ambient
you.
Noise. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is why I often get stares whenever I walk down the street and I'm screaming at my wrist, "Where do I hide a body?"
Can't imagine why that's
on Peachtree. I fit right in.
That's just a little joke for anyone else who's
lives
been
in
Atlanta. Yeah.
All right. So in our office off of Peachtree, as it turns out. So anyway, we're talking about rumors now. So getting into the rumored smartwatches that we have heard about this year, but have not yet been unveiled in an official capacity. Two big companies have smartwatches that are rumored to be on the horizon.
Yeah. Google, as of May 2013, had filed a patent for a smartwatch-looking thing.
Yeah, this wasn't the first patent for a smartwatch. They have also filed for other ones that kind of had an augmented reality aspect to them. I remember seeing one that even had a little flip-up screen. So you would flip, like, the watch face up so it's vertical on your wrist, and then you would gaze through it monocle style at the world around you to get augmented reality data. But it looks like this is...
Since Google Glass is coming out,
yeah,
that's
like a
maybe...
More advanced approach.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this new patent has Google Glass-esque touchpads on the sides of the screen.
Yeah, in fact, I've seen some speculation that this watch would actually interact with Google Glass. So
mm-hmm.
that you would become another means of controlling Google...
So that maybe you're not shouting at yourself.
Right, and I wouldn't be saying Google instead of Google. Yeah. Yeah, it's been a long day, folks. So that's one possibility. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other big company.
Apple has already filed a patent in Japan, I believe.
It's registered a trademark. Right, yeah. They haven't, as far as I know, I mean, there may be patents out there. There probably are patents out there. But it's been registering the trademark iWatch. Which,
right.
Not
yeah,
a
that's
big,
what it was.
Not a big surprise. But trademarking the word iWatch in various countries, most recently in Japan, but in other countries as well, which again suggests that the company is looking into developing its own smartwatch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is something that's been rumored for a while. Keep in mind, the iPad was rumored to be a big, big project for about 2 or 3 years before it finally came out. So... That might mean that it may be another 3 years before we see an iWatch.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe it'll be much earlier than that. But...
I said about that iPod Nano, the 6th gen, I really do think that they started counting down from 2012.
Right. And saying, you know, we need to stop making them this way because otherwise we're going
to... Because we want to sell them later on.
We'll end up cannibalizing our smartwatch mm-hmm. market if we keep selling something that's a slightly less capable and perhaps less expensive electronic device.
Yeah, that one. I've read rumors that Samsung is thinking about it.
A Galaxy smartwatch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to go along with their Galaxy Note and Galaxy smartphone lines. So yeah, I mean, we're just getting into it now, and I think really it's the wearable computer aspect that's getting to a level of sophistication and the innovation around. How you use the user interface has really helped it a lot because
touch screens are so important for this
and even voice controls and maybe we'll get to gesture controls. Like I can imagine having a watch that has the kind of accelerometers in it so that it only displays the time when you hold your arm up as if you're looking at the watch
mm-hmm.
because then it could end up saving a lot of energy whenever you're not doing that. Although to be fair. Depending upon how some of us look at our watches, that might just be frustrating. You know, because we might
sure.
be like, I could totally see what time it was right now if my watch were lit up. But
that would be pretty cool if you could direct your watch by making increasingly ridiculous gestures.
I would be glad to give someone a broken watch and tell them that's how it worked. Just to see like what kind of crazy Muppet moves we would get out of that. Note to self, something to do with Josh.
We do, by the way, we got a reader letter in and I want to say real quick that we love all of our fellow podcasters.
We do.
We honestly have zero animosity towards any of them. We like giving everyone grief on air because they're so grievable.
And trust us. If you were to see the interactions that happen within our office, you would realize this is all that kind of, you know, one-upsmanship that's completely meant in jest.
Absolutely.
None of us really intend any others, any ill will, except for me against Josh. But apart from that,
he's mostly,
I am still kidding.
Mostly
I'm
joking.
I'm still kidding. Pebble, send me my watch.
But
it's just because I'm hurt. That's all. All right. Well, I think that kind of wraps up this discussion. Lauren, let me ask you this. Do you normally wear a watch?
I do not.
Okay. I also do not normally wear a watch. Is there a smartwatch out there, a design you've seen that you've actually liked, or do you just not, is that just not something for you?
I've been thinking about getting a watch actually because I they look cool.
Yeah.
That's
the same thing I've been thinking. Like, I've got a phone that tells me what time it is and I've always got my phone on me, right? But at the same time, I think I kind of want a fashion accessory and that's really how watches started off when you think about it.
I think for me it would take one of these devices being is sexy enough. It's having that fashionable appeal
right.
of, and some of the fitness trackers are starting to get really, really cool looking.
Yeah.
And I think it would take a device, you know, looking like the Misfit Shine, for example, you know, like just something very sleek.
Yeah. So you want the aesthetic to be just right.
right.
Like for me, a little bit kind of clunky and geeky works for me because let's face it, I'm clunky and geeky, so I think it works well. But I've actually got three different smartwatches pre-ordered, and I haven't received any of them yet. Actually, technically, one of them's not a smartwatch. One of them is just a super cool watch design, which I'll show you after the episode's over. But it's not a smartwatch because it really just tells the time. It doesn't have any other extra functionality to it. Anyway, I see this as being a market that's just going to continue to get more and more competitive, especially when we start seeing flexible screens, you know, more like e-ink displays that are flexible,
right.
that kind of stuff. Or we see flexible OLED displays come down in price. And that's going to be a while, obviously. But once we start seeing that, then you're going to see the form factor for watches just go crazy because it can be molded to any shape at that point. And while we are used to watches looking a certain way, there's no guarantee that that's how they're going to look 10 years from now.
And if they get more comfortable and more wearable, then that's obviously a perk.
I can't wait for them to look like arm bracers, you know?
Like yes.
Fits over your whole forearm and can give you a full readout of everything. And dude, I would buy one in a heartbeat. I'm not even joking. I would buy those. All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of Tech Stuff. Guys, if you have any suggestions for future topics, let us know. You can write us. Our email address is techstuff@discovery.com or drop us a line on social. Our handle at both Facebook and the Twitter is TechStuffHSW, and Lauren and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.